10 years ago, the International Conference on Population and Development set a goal of gender equality and reproductive rights for women around the world. In India, women are beginning to see some progress. The vast majority of women remain bound by tradition, especially in their relationships with men. But a new generation of women is challenging the way things have been done. NPR's Brenda Wilson reports.
In India, it is difficult to reconcile what you see with stories you hear of cultural constraints. You see women in traditional saris and salwar kameezes and jeans and slacks. You see women perched on mopeds, zipping through traffic, and ensconced behind desk and counters throughout the country. They seem to exercise a glorious autonomy. It seems there is nothing they cannot do.
Every girl, I think, has a different personality, so to say, but I think if she stands up and has her own identity or makes her own identity, has her own say and do not let men take over her completely, I think it's not going to be too difficult.
Gayatri, a 27-year-old computer programmer, is wearing blue jeans and a navy blue t-shirt emblazoned in stark bold white letters, A? Question mark. She and her husband, Gauri, 29, are about to head out for an evening with friends. Gauri says they met 5 years ago at the information technology office where they both worked.
She actually became one of my good friends, and she still is. She is one of my best friends. Yeah. That's what she claims as today also. During a course of time, that friendship turned out to be a liking for each other, and I proposed her.
And he was persistent, I must say.
And it's just as well Gauri was persistent, because Gayatri says she would not have gone along with an arranged marriage.
Knowing myself, I knew I was the kind of person who will be like, okay, it doesn't matter to me, let the person do, say, behave in whatever manner. I'm not like that. So knowing myself, yes, it would have been pretty difficult.
It helped that Gayatri's elder sister had already had an arranged marriage. Marrying Gauri spared her father the price of a second dowry. A man who expected a dowry would have been unacceptable to her, she says. It would have implied a degree of ownership and control. Many say the payment of dowries is behind the violence heaped on women in India by their husbands and in-laws.
To have sex with him in marriage. The father, of course, said dowry because there's no other way to explain this whole thing.
So the morning I visited Ranjana Kumari, she was fixated on a newspaper story about a 23-year-old woman who was thrown off an apartment balcony by her husband of just 8 days.
Balcony, a naked girl was pushed from the balcony because she refused to have sex. I can imagine this happening to many, many girls, and especially girls who are coming from rural background, from village.
For 33 years, Kumari, the head of the Center for Social Research in Delhi, has struggled to improve the lot of women in India. Violence against women in India is still all too common. A survey by the United Nations Program on Women found that 1 in 3 women in the world will be raped, beaten, or coerced into sex or otherwise abused in her lifetime. In India, Kumari says, it happens because girls are often married off when they're young and have almost no understanding of sexuality.
A lot needs to be done, and especially in terms of female sexuality. And their control over their own bodies is not something that Indian women know of. You know, majority of Indian women. Of course, when you're talking about the ones who are self-possessed and who are very well aware about what's happening to them and can control it, are these educated, urban, the upper caste women.
At Apnala, a community program in a Mumbai slum called Shiva Jinagar, the director, Lina Joshi, is talking to two young girls whose expressions shift from giggles to shy and serious. A 14-year-old girl explains that she is to be married in 2 years.
She feels good about it. She's going to be married to somebody. Or she's happy.
Her friend, a year older, and not to be outdone, says that she expects a proposal any day now too. Joshi, a social worker, says she tries to encourage the girls who come to Apnala to take up a skill or get an education, something parents are willing to support. But these girls, she says, were taken in by relatives after their mother died not long ago, of an AIDS-related illness.
But lots of times we don't have control on their lives. I would have been able to do something about it. Now they are under care with somebody else.
In India, the vast majority of women are like these two young girls, destined for marriage and childbirth at an early age, before they're fully developed themselves. India's constitution guarantees women equal rights, and there are laws against the payment of dowries and domestic violence. They are seldom enforced. From conception on, women essentially start disappearing. By one economist's calculation, India is missing 25 million women. The reason? Everything from selective abortion, infanticide, to nutritional deprivation. The situation has gotten worse, even as life expectancy has improved. The latest danger to their well-being is AIDS, transmitted in most cases by their husbands.
Scary, you know, I mean, they've heard about HIV, but they feel that, I don't think I can get it. You know, they had that kind of an attitude.
Devyani Biswas is a psychologist in Mumbai. She counsels men who come to a clinic for HIV tests.
They go out to these red light areas and they get the virus and then they come home, you know, so they obviously cannot stick to their wives.
Her generation, her middle class friends, she says, have experimented with sexual freedom and suffered the consequences, abortions, rejections. She's come to a kind of blanket conclusion that men in India, lower class and middle class, treat women with a careless disregard.
You know, my father used to be like that in his youth, and he gave a lot of heartache to my mother because of that. And I've seen that, you know, and this kind of reinforced that, thought. And then I've seen my brother being the same, you know, I mean, having affairs with girls and just dumping them. And there was he was almost engaged to one girl who became my best friend, and, you know, so that was like really horrible.
A fate she's determined to avoid, since she has a good job and no reason to marry yet. At the Center for Social Research, Ranjana Kumari looks back over 30 years of fasts and strikes and wearing black saris and finds that with the exception of a few powerful women, the reality is that women in India have not achieved enough power to control the decisions that affect their lives.
When the husband is a good assassination material, then perhaps the women gets the political power. But when it comes to real share in power, you will see that nowhere in South Asia, no parliament of South Asia has more than 8% women represented. So it's only symbolic.
At the local level, more women are gaining power, and in some sectors of the society. Our young couple in Delhi's suburbs, Gauri and Gayatri, are riding the crest of India's economic prosperity and optimism.
We had never really blatantly said, oh, I love you. You know, it was just an understood and an implicit feeling that we had. And so, yes, that's what the society and my parents and everybody would say, that you had a love marriage and you were in love.
I would say that, you know, I loved her from day one. So I loved her as a friend, truly, deeply, madly loved her. And I still love her, and I am going to love her, so that's what, I mean, I would be pretty straight about that.
Somewhere on the outskirts of Delhi, progress. Brenda Wilson, NPR News.